Take your scarf off.
I used to try to recall the days of my childhood, but when I succeeded, other things which brought the contribution of anxiety and fear were coughing, which sounded like that of the gods. Black horses in front of the butcher shop. Black horses in front of the butcher shop. My stating and the fearless flagon should someday reveal a streak of blood. That the salty liquid rich rises from the depths of the body, the juices of life. From the ancient city of Ray. Yes. That's all right. You can have the jar. Keep it to remember me by.
Suddenly, I felt that she was biting my lips savagely. So savagely that she bit it through. Used she to bite her nail in this way, or had she realized that I was not the hair-lipped old man? I tried to break free from her, but was unable to make the slightest movement. My efforts were useless. The flesh of our bodies had been soldered into one. I thought to myself that she had gone mad. As we struggled, I involuntarily jerked my hand. I felt the knife, which I was still holding, sink somewhere into her flesh. A warm liquid spurted into my face. She uttered a shriek and released me. Keeping my fist clenched on the warm liquid in my hand, I tossed the knife away. I ran my other hand over her body. It was utterly cold. She was dead. And then I burst into a fit of coughing. But no, it was not coughing. It was a hollow, grating laugh of a quality to make the hairs on one's body stand on end. In terror, I threw my cloak over my shoulders and hurried back to my own room. I opened my hand in the light of the oil lamp. In the palm of my hand lay her eye, and I was drenched in blood.
Violence of my agitation seemed to have awakened me from a long deep sleep. I rubbed my eyes. I was back in my own room. It was half dark and outside a wet mist pressed against the window panes. Somewhere in the distance a cock crowed. The charcoal in the brazier beside me had burned to cold ashes which I could have blown away with a single breath. I felt that my mind had become hollow and ashy like the coals, and was at the mercy of a single breath.
Dit was dokter Klangenbloem. Dit was dokter Klangenbloem. Dit was dokter Klangenbloem. Dit was dokter Klangenbloem. Vind ons op www.klangenbloem.nl.
Dit is dokter Klangenbloem. Dit is Dr. Klangendoom. Dit is Dr. Klangendoom. Dit is Dr. Klangendoom. Jawel, dit is Dr. Klangendoom. Hou op met het stomme gezang. Ik bedoel gezien. Ja? Ja, wat nu? Ja. Wat dan? Oh ja. Back to where I should have always been. Oh ja.
Jitter Nottingham.
Farmer. Raisin Nigger's son.
Comes long sticking rummage. Church woman Hammond Lindsay. Service
I shall try to set down what I can remember, what has remained in my mind of the sequence of events. I may perhaps be able to draw a general conclusion from it all, but no, that is too much to expect. I may hope to be believed by others, or at least to convince myself, for, after all, It doesn't matter to me whether others believe me or not. My one fear is that tomorrow I may die without having come to know myself. In the course of my life, I have discovered that a fearful abyss lies between me and other people, and have realized that my best course is to remain silent and keep my thoughts to myself for as long as I can.
I suppose you want to get into town. Lost your way, eh? Suppose you're wondering what I'm doing in a graveyard at this time of night. No need to be afraid. Dead bodies are my regular business. Grave digging's my trade. Not a bad trade, eh? I know every nook and cranny of this place. Take a case in point. Today I went out on a grave digging job. Found this jar in the ground. Know what it is? It's a flower vase from Rajas. Comes from the ancient city of Ray. Yes. That's all right. You can have the jar. Keep it to remember me by.
After she had gone, I withdrew from the company of men, from the company of the stupid and the successful, and in order to forget, took refuge in wine and opium. My life passed and still passes within the four walls of my room. All my life has passed within four walls.
It was the 13th day of Nowruz. Everyone had gone out to the country. I had shut the window of my room in order to be able to concentrate on my painting. It was not long before sunset and I was working away when suddenly the door opened and my uncle came into the room. That is, he said he was my uncle. I had never seen my uncle in my life, for he had been abroad ever since his early youth. I seem to remember that he was a sea captain. I imagined he might have some business matter to discuss with me, since I understood that he was interested in commerce as well. At all events, my uncle was a bent old man with an Indian turban on his head and a ragged yellow cloak on his back. His face was partly concealed by a scarf wrapped around his neck. His shirt was open and revealed a hairy chest. It would have been possible to count the hairs of the sparse beard protruding from under the scarf, which muffled his neck. His eyelids were red and sore, and he had a hare lip. He resembled me in a remote, comical way, like a reflection in a distorting mirror. I had always pictured my father something like this.
Today is a new day for your residents. With the levels at their headline making historic lows, our programs are better now than ever before. Even if you've recently closed on a property.
She was wearing a black pleated dress which clung tightly to her body. Gazing at her, I was certain that she wished to leap across the stream which separated her from the old man, but that she was unable to do so. All at once, the old man burst into laughter. It was a hollow, grating laugh, of a quality to make the hairs of one's body stand on end. A harsh, sinister, mocking laugh. And yet the expression of his face did not change. It was as though the laughter was echoing from somewhere deep within his body.
All at once, the old man burst into laughter. It was a hollow, grating laugh, of a quality to make the hairs on one's body stand on end. A harsh, sinister, mocking laugh. And yet, the expression of his face did not change. It was as though the laughter was echoing from somewhere deep within his body.
I lifted the suitcase with great care and lowered it into the trench, which proved to be a perfect fit. However, I felt that it Woof, I fell, but I must look into the keys once more. I fell, I must look in the keys once more. I looked around, not a soul. I looked around, not a soul was to be seen. I took the key and opened the lid. I took the key and opened the lid. I drew aside a corner of the black grass and saw a metal massive. Go take a lid, blood, just one maggot. Red black eyes, gazing fixedly at me. With no trace of expression in them. No expression, no. Filled that my entire being was submerged in that those eyes was submerged in that those eyes was submerged in that those eyes. I felt the time was
I call her the bitch because no other name would suit her so well. I do not like to say simply my wife, because the man-wife relationship did not exist between us, and I should be lying to myself if I called her so. Ever since I can remember, I looked upon my aunt as a mother and loved her deeply. I loved her so deeply that later on I married her daughter, my foster sister, simply because she looked like her. Or rather, I was forced to marry her. She gave herself to me only once. I shall never forget it. It happened by the bedside of her dead mother, late at night, after everyone had gone to bed.
Lost your way, eh? Suppose you're wondering what I'm doing in the graveyard at this time of night. No need to be afraid. Dead bodies are my regular business.
That's all right. You can have the jar. Keep it to remember me by. That's all right. You can have the jar. Keep it to remember me by. That's all right. You can have the jar. Keep it to remember me by. That's all right.
Thank you. If I only could have slept peacefully, as I did in the days when I was an innocent child.
My eyes were not yet closed when a band of drunken policemen marched by in the street, outside my room, joking obscenely among themselves. Then they sang in chorus.
Come, let's go and drink wine. Let's drink wine of the
We're not far from Shahb Dalazim. You won't find a better place than this for what you want. There's never a bird flies by here, no.
I put my hand into my pocket, intending to pay the driver his fare. All that I had with me were 2 krans and 1 abbasi. The driver burst into a hollow, grating laugh and said,
"That's all right. Don't bother. I'll get it from you later. I know where you live. You haven't got any other jobs for me, no? I know something about grave digging, I can tell you. Yes. Nothing to be ashamed of. Shall we go? There's a stream near here, by a cypress tree. I'll dig you a hole just the right size for the suitcase and then we'll go."
The old man sprang down from his seat with a nimbleness of which I could not have imagined him to be capable. I took up the case and we walked side by side until we reached a dead tree which stood beside a dry river bed. My companion said,
"This is a good place."
Without waiting for an answer, he began at once to dig with a small spade and a pick, which he had brought with him. I set the suitcase down and stood beside it in a kind of torpor. The old man, bent double, was working away with the deftness of one who was used to the job. In the course of his digging, he came across an object, which looked like a glazed jar. He wrapped it up in a dirty handkerchief, stood up and said,
"There's your hole. Yes, just the right size for the suitcase, the perfect fit, yes."
I put my hand into my pocket to pay him for his work. All that I had with me were 2 krans and 1 abbasi. The old man burst into a hollow laugh, which brought out goose flesh all over my body and said,
"Don't worry about that, that's all right. I know where you live, yes. In any case, I found a jar that'll do me instead of pay. It's a flower vase from Rajas. Comes from the ancient city of Ray. Yes."
What was I to do with the body? A body which had already begun to decompose. At first, I thought of burying it in my room, then taking it away and throwing it down some wells, surrounded by flowers of blue morning glory. But how much thought, how much effort and dexterity would be necessary in order to do these things without attracting attention? And then, I did not want the eye of any stranger to fall upon her. I had to do everything alone and unaided, not that I mattered. What point was there to my existence now that she had gone? But she, never, never must any ordinary person, anyone but me, look upon her dead body. She had come to my room and had surrendered her cold body and her shadow to me in order that no one else should see her, in order that she should not be defiled by a stranger's glance. Finally, an idea came to me. I would cut up her body, pack it in a suitcase, my old suitcase, take it away with me to some place far, very far from people's eyes, and bury it there. Stood up and I walked back to my house. I went into my room and with difficulty got the suitcase with the dead body across to the door. I observed, standing in the street outside the door, a dilapidated old hearse to which were harnessed 2 black skeleton thin horses. The old man was sitting on the driver's seat at the front of the hearse, holding a long whip. He did not turn to look in my direction. With a great effort, I heaved the suitcase into the hearse, where there was a sunken space designed to hold the coffins. after which I climbed on board myself and lay down in the coffin space, resting my head against the ledge so as to be able to see out as we drove along. I slid the suitcase onto my chest and held it firmly with both hands.
I wish to say something, but I feared that my voice would offend her ears, her sensitive ears, which were accustomed surely to distant, heavenly, gentle music.
I wished to say something, but I feared that my voice would offend her ears, her sensitive ears, which were accustomed, surely, to distant, heavenly, gentle music.
My opinion that the best course a man could take in life was to remain silent, that one could not do better than withdraw into solitude, like the bittern which spreads its wings beside some lonely lake. Israel. Then I fell asleep. When I awoke in the morning, my nurse said to me,
"My daughter came to your bedside and took your head in her lap and rocked you like a baby."
Call her the bitch, because no other name would suit her so well. I do not like to say simply my wife, because the man-wife relationship did not exist between us, and I should be lying to myself if I called her so. From the beginning of time, I've called her the bitch, and the word has had a curious charm for me. If I married her, it was because she made the first advances. She did so by design and fraud. No, she had no kindness for me. How could she ever have felt kindness for anyone? A sensual creature who required one man to satisfy a lust. Another to play the gallant, and another to satisfy her need to inflict pain. Not that I think she restricted herself to this trinity, but at any rate, I was the one she selected to torture. The crisis, the approach of which I had felt in advance, and which I was expecting from moment to moment, came upon me. My whole body was filled with burning heat, and I felt that I was suffocating. I collapsed onto my bed and shut my eyes. It seemed to me, in my feverish condition, that everything had expanded and had lost all distinctness of outline. The ceiling, instead of sinking, had risen. I felt oppressed by the weight of my clothes. For no reason, I stood up and sat down again upon my bed, murmuring to myself, "This thing has reached the limit. This is beyond endurance." Then I stopped abruptly. After a little, I began again, slowly and distinctly, in an ironical tone of voice. The thing was, I stopped and added, "I'm a fool." I paid no attention to the mean words I uttered. I was merely amusing myself with the vibration of my voice in the air. Perhaps I was talking to my shadow in order to dispel my loneliness. And then I saw an incredible thing. The door opened and the bitch came into the room. So then, she used to think of me at times. And in spite of everything, I still had reason to feel grateful to her. She knew that I was still alive, that I was suffering, that I was slowly dying. In spite of everything, I still had reason to feel grateful to her. I only wondered whether she knew that I was dying because of her. If she did know that, I would die perfectly happy.
The weather had again set to mist and fine rain. I went outside in the hope of finding someone who might help me with the case. There was not a soul to be seen. I walked a little way, peering into the mist. Suddenly I caught sight of a bent old man sitting at the foot of a cypress tree. His face could not be seen for a white scarf which he wore wrapped around his neck. I walked slowly up to him. I had still not uttered a word when the old man burst into a hollow, grating, sinister laugh, which made the hairs on my body stand on end, and said,
"If you want a porter, I'm at your service. Yes. I've got a hearse as well. I take dead bodies every day to Shabd al-Azim and bury them there. Yes, I make coffins too. Got coffins of every size, the perfect fit for everybody. At your service, right away."
Thank you.
Apparently the driver of the hearse was taking me by a byroad, or by some special route of his own. In some places, all that was to be seen on either side of the road were stumps and rye twisted trees, beyond which were houses, some squat, some tall, of geometrical shapes, perfect cones, truncated cones, with narrow, crooked windows, from which blue flowers of morning glory protruded and twined over the doors and walls. Then this landscape disappeared abruptly in a dense mist.
She asked me in a sarcastic tone.
How are you feeling?
I replied, aren't you perfectly free? Don't you do everything you feel like doing? What does my health matter to you?
When Nanny brought me my ass's milk, honey and bread, I found that she had placed a bone-handled knife on the tray beside the breakfast things. She said she had noticed it among the old odds and ends man's wares and had bought it from him. Then she said, raising her eyebrows,
"Let's hope it'll come in handy someday."
I picked it up and examined it. It was my own knife. Then Nanny said in a querulous, offended tone,
"Oh, yes, my daughter,"
she meant the bitch,
"was saying this morning that I stole her nightdress during the night. I don't want to have to answer for anything connected with you two. Anyway, she began to bleed yesterday. I knew it was the baby. According to her, she got pregnant at the bar. I went to her room to massage her belly during the night, and I noticed her arms were all black and blue. She showed them to me and said, 'I went down to the cellar at an unlucky time, and the good people gave me an awful pinching.'"
She went on,
"Did you know your wife's been pregnant for a long time?"
I laughed and said, "I dare say the child will look like the old man that reads the Quran. I suppose it gave its first leap when she was looking at the old man's face."
He roared with laughter, so that his shoulders shook. I pointed in the direction of my house, but he said, before I had a chance to utter a word,
"That's all right. I know where you live. I'll be there right away."
"Mommy says the doctor said you're going to die and it'll be a good riddance for us. How do people die?"
I said, "Tell her I've been dead for a long time."
"Mommy said if I hadn't had a miscarriage, the whole house would have belonged to us."
I involuntarily burst out laughing. It was a hollow, grating laugh, of a quality to make the hairs on one's body stand on end. I did not recognize the sound of my own voice. The child ran from the room in terror.
"I understood now that I had become a miniature god. I had transcended the mean paltry needs of mankind and felt within me the flux of eternity. What is eternity to me? Eternity meant to play hide and seek with the bitch on the bank of the Suran, to shut my eyes for a single moment and hide my face in the skirt of her dress.
Have you come? Take your scarf off.
Her voice had a pleasant quality, as it had had in her childhood. It reminded me of the unconscious murmuring of someone who is dreaming. I myself had heard this voice in the past, when I was in a deep sleep. Was she dreaming? Her voice was husky and thick. It had become like the voice of the little girl who had played hide and seek with me on the bank of the Suran. I stood motionless. Then I heard her say again,
"Come in! Take your scarf